It's time for America's most unique motorsports show, Mostly Motorsports with Scott Traylor, brought to you by Lucas Oil Products. It works.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Mostly Motorsports. I'm Scott Traylor, along with producer Austin O'Neill. And today's show is brought to you by Lucas Oil Products. It works. Sitting in the studio with us today is a good friend of the Racing Boys, longtime friend of the Racing Boys. The Postman, Steve Post, joins us here in studio. Steve, how you doing, brother?
I am fantastic. Boy, I'll tell you what, it is good to, I know I always enjoy our chats via the phone, but man, yep. I'll tell you what, it's good to be here in person and enjoying all the finer things here in Kansas City.
Big, big weekend at Kansas Speedway this weekend.
Really, truly is. The second yep. round of the NASCAR playoffs, nobody is secure, nobody is locked yep. in. You know, the reward for getting locked in, if you can do that this Sunday at the Hollywood Casino 400, is that you don't have to go to the nightmare of Bristol and try to race your way into the playoffs. So a lot on the line this week after a lot happened at Darlington as well.
Were you surprised at the guys that are kind of outside looking in right now, down at the bottom of the list right now? Because there was a, you know, when you look at it, when you sit here and you look at it, I'm looking at Austin Cedric, Chase Briscoe, Kevin Harvick. Are you a little surprised by that?
The Harvick one does surprise yeah. me, but yeah. when you think about the situation he had with the fire, Chase Briscoe probably not. They won that race at Phoenix, but their performance has been a little off par. Right. Austin Cedric doesn't surprise me that he's there. I don't think there's any major surprises other than Harvick. And then I think the other thing, from the positive side of it, you know, Chase Elliott worked his guts out all year long to put himself in an advantageous right. spot, and one misstep and that's gone.
Yeah.
He's got no wiggle room now. He's got zero wiggle room as we go into Kansas and then out of Bristol.
Yeah, no doubt about it. That's not the big story of the day, though, is it?
No, not at all. No, North Wilkesboro. Man.
North Dude. Wilkesboro is the story of the day. You had a little insight to this last night. So they have decided they are not going to take the pavement off. Now, we don't know yet for sure, do we? We don't know if they're going to take the pavement off, repave it, mm-hmm. but we know one thing, they're not going to make it a dirt track.
Yeah, the original plan of North Wilkesboro, the racetrack revival, was in the month of August, they were going to run on the original asphalt that was
right.
there. Yep. And they did that. They ran a modified race, they ran a super late model race, and then they ran the Cars Tour race there, which was immensely successful last yeah. Wednesday night. I've been to a lot of races. There's not many better events than that.
Was that because of Junior, you think?
A lot of it was. Yeah. There's no doubt. But mm-hmm. but I said, be careful, you Junior fans. You're going to go to this Cars Tour race, and you may find yourself following the Cars Tour because
right.
the racing is that good.
Yeah.
And it was.
It was really good.
Racing is good. That yeah. tour knocks it out every place it goes, whether it's North Wilkesboro or Hickory or Florence Motor Speedway or
good fan count
good,
always.
Good fan, solid fan count. They
yeah.
do well.
Yeah.
They do well, not like that, obviously.
Right.
So I think you had a good race. And immediately afterward, it's like, and we're going to tear this racetrack up for what reason?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the plan right. was to tear it up, go dirt racing there in the month of October. And they had, I think, three or four weekends, or they do some Tuesday, Wednesday deals, three or four events there in October, and then repave as we go forward.
Right.
I just think that what happened last week, it was so immensely popular that it was like they shattered the goals. They didn't beat the goals.
Right.
They shattered the goals. And it was like, wait a minute. Do we want to keep to the plan, or do we want to accelerate things? And well, I think that's where we're at with it, and they announced today that the All-Star race is going to be there next year.
So you were telling me that you thought there was about 21,000 people there,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. There was about 21,000 people yeah. there. First and foremost, and the atmosphere, Scott, was college football.
Electric.
Yes, it was. It was electric the whole day. They had a band there that was really good, Dirty Grass Soul, that just kind of from 5 to 6:30 got everything really amped up. Of course, everyone was just happy to be there.
Right.
North Wilkesboro, 50% of the crowd had Sundrop shirts on. You know, I mean, it was, you know, there was just a lot of excitement. There was a lot of energy, a lot of excitement. And then the race started, and, you know, Junior qualified 6th or 8th, and he dropped back to 11th, and then they had a break, and then...
Worked his way up.
Well, lap 100, he was running 8th.
Right.
And then he found his stride, and then he was running 7th, and then he was running 6th, and at one point he got 2 at one time. Well...
Let me ask you this. Do you think that he was pushing it in the beginning of the race? Do you think that he was trying really hard, or did he want to make the other drivers feel like they were doing better than he was?
No, I think we all knew going in it was a tire management race, and I think he did a masterful job managing
his tires. He just took care of his tires.
I think he did. Yeah. I think he did a masterful job. I think the only one, I mean, Mason Diaz finished second, and Carson Quapel, who won the race, he was leading. He was able to manage his tires as good. But I think Junior just managed his tires. When he got to 7th, he passed somebody, and then he got to 6th, then all of a sudden everybody's sitting there in the stands, and this is all in the last 25 laps.
Right.
Everyone
yeah.
sitting in the stands is now sitting up on the edge of their seat. And then when he broke into the top 5, everyone sitting on the edge of their seat is standing.
Right.
And when he passed into 4th and into 3rd, it was college football. It was overtime win, college football student section. I mean, it was this, and you're riding along, and he got into 3rd with 6 or 7 laps to go. 2 laps to go, there's a caution.
Right. I thought he might get to 2nd.
I thought so, too.
Yeah.
Dude, I'm telling you what, that place was coming unglued. Now, he stayed 3rd. He wasn't going to – Mason Diaz finished 2nd. Mason's a great racer. Mason's dad, Mike, owns Southern National Speedway. Mason's ran a couple of truck races, a couple of Xfinity races. He's a great young racer.
Yeah.
And then Carson – I'm telling you, Scott, we could still be running laps at North Wilkesboro and nobody was going to catch Carson Quapel. I watched on my race pass. I watched him all night long. I watched him, with the exception of cautions, I watched him keep a margin of 0.8 to 1 second the whole night long. I'm watching on my race pass. Every lap, when it would get down under 0.8 of a second, the next lap would be 9.
Right.
And 0.9 of a second. When it got over a second, the next lap would be down to 9 again.
Yeah.
But that was managing the tires is what that was.
You know,
we'd still be chasing them. If they could run 1,000 laps the way that car was, and they'd still be chasing them.
It's so funny that you say that. You know, Carl Edwards drove my super truck for me out at I-70 Speedway for the World Cup 100 one time. And what he told me is, he said, all I want to know is how big a gap I have and what my lap time is. Because he was just toying with those guys.
Yeah.
He was so much better than them, but he didn't want to embarrass them too much at the same time.
Well,
and so every lap I would say, oh, you're clear by 5, and you ran a 17.80, whatever it was.
Right, yeah.
And then if he felt like he was too far out on him, he'd roll up and he'd run a 18-second lap or something.
The great ones, but what you're doing there, it's not a matter of embarrassing, but it's also a matter of protecting your stuff. Because if you get into a scrum at the end, a green white checker at the end, and if you've burned your stuff up, you're not going to be any good. We got into that. That's what we had at North Wilkesboro. We had a scrum at the end. Okay.
Yeah.
Mason Diaz is not the racer. He'll go down there and race Carson Quapel hard.
Right.
And he might have leaned on him a little bit, but he's not the one that's going to go down there and dump him. And by the time we hit the backstretch, Carson Quapel survived the scrum, if you will, and was back out into the lead. But it was a phenomenal night. And Carson driving for Dale Earnhardt Jr. They're both doing Polish victory laps, and the crowd is just going wild. And at that point, you're thinking, all right, this was a little bit better than we thought it was going to be. And turns out that's an understatement. It was a lot better.
Yeah.
And so Junior gets out of the car and is like, you know, this race better than I thought it was going to race. This whole everything was good. Somebody asked him about tearing it up and going dirt, and he's like, I'm not sure why we would do that. And I think there was, on the other side of the equation,
that resonated with some people.
Resonated with some people, no doubt.
Yeah.
And on the other side of the equation, there was definitely some strong desire in the NASCAR industry to move the All-Star race from Texas.
Yeah.
There was a lot of speculation as to where it might go. One option that was apparently being explored was the Roval, because nobody was excited about the All-Star race at Texas. So you have a little dissatisfaction with where the All-Star race is in Texas, Speedway Motorsports property.
Yep.
And you have in North Wilkesboro, North Carolina, this little dirt track, which, by the way, one of NASCAR's mantras has been, we need more short tracks.
Yep.
You have this little short track overachieved, and then we have today's announcement.
So do you feel like they should pull up the pavement? Me personally, I've said this from the beginning. Leave the pavement alone. The only thing that I've been concerned about is the sealer. Because there is a ton of sealer on that racetrack where they fill the cracks, right?
My hunch is, and I don't know that we have a clear answer on that. The only thing I got from the announcement today was Dale Jr. hopes they keep the original surface there. Okay, my hunch is we may see some tire testing sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
And to see where we're at with this. Because here's where you don't want this thing to go south, okay? You don't want this thing to go south 20 laps into the All-Star race when everybody on the planet is watching, and by the way, everyone on the planet will be watching.
Yeah.
You don't want this track to start develop potholes.
Yeah.
Because you take this spectacular story and you turn it into the biggest nightmare.
Let me ask you this. Is it worse for a pothole to pop up, or is it worse for new pavement to be put down and it's run single file? I think single file racing is the most boring racing.
Well, I think so too, but I think when you put the new pavement down, I'll be anxious to see how much tire dragging is going on, how much resin is applied, how much practice is going to happen, how many races are they going to have? This is May 23rd. Let's hypothetically go with the new pavement. How much do they race there in March and April into May with late model stock cars, modified cars, that sort of thing, to get a little bit wore into it? I agree with you in principle, but with resins and maybe the grade of asphalt too, because I'm telling you what, they paved Rockingham one time, and it was about 6 days later, and it was an old worn out Rockingham again, and Darlington about the same. Right. It didn't take long to.
Well, Kansas Speedway is one of those racetracks as well, because there's a new kind of asphalt that they're putting down, a new kind of technology behind it, and Kansas Speedway, from the first year they put that pavement down, they were racing at the top.
We've learned a lot about asphalt technology since the old days of pave a racetrack, give up 6 years.
Yeah.
We've learned a lot about it, and that would all be applied at North Wilkesboro. I think I'm in the if at all possible, leave the surface as it is. But if it causes a disaster, then we're going to have to pave it. I'm fairly confident that they can put down pavement to make it a racy joint.
So do you feel that they need to get up there and they need to take a good 15 or 20 cars, don't they?
I would think, but I'm not sure how you do that in where we're at now. But I would love to see that. I don't know how realistic that is.
Yeah.
But I would love to see that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, or do you put Xfinity Series cars on there for a bit? You know, a test day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's a tough, you know, the bottom line is it's a tough sell. Why are you taking an Xfinity Series car there? Are you mixing the message? Are you doing anything? But I think you want to learn as much about that old worn out surface before that decision is made.
Need to put some heavy cars on there.
Yeah. So we'll see. I mean, it's just, but man, exciting times. You know, Scott, we've spent a lot of time here in the last couple of weeks talking about closing down racetracks, and here's one that's revived. Here's one that is starting up and thriving at this point.
Let me ask you this, Steve. Do you think there's a possibility? There's a lot of racetracks that are closed down in that area, right?
Yep.
Do you think this is an opportunity to open up some of these other racetracks that have been closed down? Because everybody's pushing for short track racing right now, right?
Yes, sure. No doubt.
Do you think that creates opportunity to open up some other racetracks?
Scott, it's interesting, and I don't have the numbers in front of me. I do a blog, and I don't talk much about it because it's not personal. It's a public blog. It's called Postman 68.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I just started documenting, and yesterday I had my first story posted, is North Wilkesboro is not the only track that's been revived in the last year or so.
Yeah.
There was, and I'm doing them chronologically, in March of last year, Putnam Raceway in Satsuma, Florida, I think it is, reopened. in March or April of last year, West Virginia Motor Speedway opened. Now it's since shut down. My next one on the list is I-70 Speedway right here.
Right.
Last year, I think there were six tracks that opened. Rebirth, and I'm calling it Racetrack Restart.
You don't see many promoters wanting to open up racetracks right now.
But we had six tracks last year that did a Racetrack Restart. That's what I'm calling the series that I'm doing.
Yeah.
And I think there's nine this year. Little dirt tracks across the country and little racetracks across the country. North Wilkesboro being one of them. There's one All-American Speedway in the eastern part of North Carolina. There's a couple of Benton, Missouri, I think, has a track that just recently reopened. And I'm going to do this over the next few weeks on my blog site. And it's just two or three paragraphs about the history of the track and why
it closed and why it opened. Yeah.
And then just the link to the website to try to support these tracks. So to your question, it's so weird to be having this conversation because last week we were having the conversation about Grandview Speedway, about I-30 Speedway, and potentially Devil's Bowl Speedway, icons of short track racing, all
huge
on the market,
loss.
Off the market, somewhere in between in that conversation. And yet simultaneously we have North Wilkesboro. Like, I did your show last week where we're talking about those three tracks while I was driving to North Wilkesboro. Talk about weird.
Right.
You know, it's like, well, wait a minute. Is this revival or is this thing shutting down? You know, is this sport? Are we going forward or going backward? And I think it's just evolution is what it is.
If there was one track down in that area that you'd like to see reopen up, what would it be?
Oh, well, it's not even an option now, but Concord Speedway.
Yeah.
And it's of all things, it's a Copart junkyard. That was the first one. Same company that's apparently in the process
buying all
of
these
I-30 on the
process
of Grandview.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's a
I-80.
Another one. Yeah. Oh, you're right, I-80.
Right.
Concord, and I was talking to the legendary Freddie Querry, who was an icon at Concord, and Jack Sprague, who made a name. Jack Sprague became Jack Sprague because of his success at Concord Speedway. And they had a series, and it was a tri-oval, had a dogleg in the backstretch, and they had a Big Ten series. And, I mean, it was Rich Bickle and Jack Sprague.
Is Rich Bickle maybe the most underrated short-track driver of all time?
His career is unreal.
Yeah. I mean, he rates right there with Larry Phillips, Dick Trickle.
Yeah, I think so.
Rich Bickle.
I agree with you, too. And so, but there was a whole Michigan-Wisconsin contingent that would come down. They had the Big Ten series, and those races in super late model, asphalt super late model racing, they were every bit as big. Every one of them was every bit as big as the Snowball Derby. And then it just kind of fizzled and faded, and some people got in there that didn't, and then the next thing you know, it's a junkyard.
You know what's so funny about it to me is that in the Midwest, pavement racing is dead.
Yeah.
I don't understand why it thrives in certain areas. There's more pavement racing, obviously, down there in North Carolina.
Yeah.
And you see it up in Michigan, right?
No doubt.
You see a lot of it up there.
It's great, yeah.
But why doesn't it work anywhere else, Steve? Can you answer that for me?
I think part of it is, I'll tell you, we're in a neat spot. I can only speak for the Southeast. The Southeast, and a lot of this is the NASCAR influence, the NASCAR base, the NASCAR weekly racing series, the Caraways, the Concords, the Hickories, the South Boston's, those places. And in complete honesty, 6 or 8 years ago, those tracks, quite honestly, I can't speak for every one of them, but across the board, there was a lot of struggling. Concord went away. Some of the other tracks have, certainly struggled. I think there's probably others that have gone away. I can't come to the top of mind. And I don't know what's happened now lately. I think I know what's happened. And this kind of goes to the conversation we had last week. There's been a little changing of the guard running some of these tracks, and there's some young, new blood promoters running these tracks. I am telling you, South Boston Speedway, historic South Boston Speedway, is one of the best run and best attended short tracks in the country. And I was there 10 years ago where it's like, well, the last person out, lock the door. I mean, I just think that there's and that late model stock racing, the type of racing we saw in North Wilkesboro, there's a couple of ways to do this. There's the NASCAR weekly series battle, and you got the Philip Morrises of the world, the Lane Riggs, I think, as Scott Riggs' boy won the Czech Championship at South Boston. And you've got guys that do that. So you've got people that choose to run home tracks, and then you've got this cars tour that goes around. So do you want a tour? Do you want to run home tracks? What fits your budget? What fits your sponsorship?
Right,
what
right,
fits your model? Right. Then at the end of the year, we have Martinsville, their big 300 up there where everybody goes to.
Right.
And then you've got, used to be the Myrtle Beach 400, now the Myrtle Beach is shut down. Florence Motor Speedway has one. Southern Nationals paying $50,000 to win in a Thanksgiving Classic race. And so you have, I'm choosing to run the Cars Tour, or I'm choosing to run South Boston or Langley or Florence Motor Speedway on a regular basis, and I'll do my thing, but I'll see you, we'll see everyone at Martinsville.
Right.
And so I think the model is working well. I think some of the tracks are doing well. I think some of the teams are doing well. There's a Landon Huffman is a driver at Hickory that is a social media guru with his YouTube page, and they're everything from, you know, they're hardcore racers, and I think tomorrow night he's in line to wrap up the track championship at Hickory, but then they're at the bar, the local bar afterwards, celebrating, good
old hanging out
and doing things, and they're at the local baseball stadium game as a crew, and then they're in the shop busting their knuckles as a crew. Landon has done a great job, and I was talking to him last week. I said there's a resurgence in late model stock racing, and it's not you solely. It's you plus the Cars Tour plus Josh Berry plus Florence Motor Speedway plus this plus that. You start stacking that together, and asphalt racing in the Southeast is about as good as it's been in a long, long time.
Does it pay enough?
Apparently, they keep getting cars. I mean,
yeah.
I think that that's a I think that's a shortcoming, but I think it's going in the right direction. I was curious about that. I assume most of the Cars Tour races, I think, pay $6,000 to win, is what they do. Last week at North Wilkesboro, it was $10,000 to win.
Mm-hmm.
Southern National has a $50,000 to win race at the end of the year. So I think it's getting there. I think it is. The other little thing that's been a part of all of motorsports, I think they're starting to tap in a little bit to some of the streaming as well, some of the streaming money.
Yeah.
The NASCAR streaming service, the NASCAR Flow relationship, has poured money into it. Florence Motor Speedway streams weekly, South Boston streams weekly, Langley streams weekly, and Hickory do. Hickory streams weekly. I've not mentioned Bowman Gray because Bowman Gray's its own animal there. Bowman Gray Stadium is its own animal. So I'm talking late model stock racing.
Yeah.
And I think those tracks have seen not only a resurgence, but the structure. I will say this. We all, and I don't know the numbers, we all have murkiness about pay-per-view money.
Yeah.
You know, and shoot, that's why new things are changing and people are wringing their hands and changing things now.
A lot of hands out right now. Yeah.
To a person, everyone I've talked to within the NASCAR Flow Racing arrangement said a lot of that money is going to tracks and trickling to racers, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
I talked to Justin Bonsignore. He's the NASCAR Wheel and Modified driver, and this was at PRI right after the announcement. And he said, this is the single biggest, best money news that the NASCAR Wheel and Modified Tour has had in years and years and years.
Wow.
So I think, you know, we're all of the hands are out as far as the pie goes. It seems like NASCAR and its tracks and Flow have a pretty good distribution model, that it's getting to the right places where some of these places are, like I said, South Boston and Langley are having banner years up there.
Well, you know, as a pavement racer myself, that I raced for 15 years on pavement, you know, the one thing I think that people can do to help the pavement racers afford to be able to run on pavement is cut back on the practice
time. No doubt.
Time.
That's been COVID helped us with that.
But because if they let you practice all day, you're going to burn up $1,200 worth of tires.
Yeah.
Right?
And you have to do it because everyone else is doing it.
Right.
And you do it. I think
because if not, you get behind eight ball.
I think there's part of that, and I think there's less practice than there used to be. I think that they've seen that. The problem is, and it's, again, this model, and we talked a little bit about this last week with the back gate model versus the front gate model. There's also the tire money model.
Yeah.
You know, so as your track promoter, tire money is part of your revenue stream. Well, it sounds bad to be burning up tires, except if that's part of your revenue stream, well, you want that. You got to balance that. You got to find that balance as to how much the racers can afford to do to contribute to my revenue stream. So it's a fascinating discussion. I really like the direction the asphalt world in the Southeast is going.
Do you think they're going to have to replace those grandstands down the back straightaway in order to get more fans into the racetrack there at North Wilkesboro?
I would think so. They had all kinds of it was a sweet grandstand area. They had all kinds of banners over it, and I didn't pay close attention to it.
How bad a shape it was in?
Yeah, I didn't pay that much attention. The Junior Johnson grandstand is gone, so I don't even know where that's at. It might be at some short track somewhere across the
country. How many people do they need to sit for this All-Star race, do you think?
Well, it's a fascinating discussion.
30, 45,000? How many do you think?
Scott, that's a great question, and again, there's a numbers that we will never see, okay?
Or never know.
We never know.
Yeah.
But we also understand that this sport is largely driven by television revenue.
Yeah.
So if television revenue is driving this sport, and television revenue will continue to drive this sport, 2024, there'll be a new television agreement, and it will be significantly bigger than the present one, and the present one is good.
Right.
TV money is driving this sport. So if you're having an event, I think this North Wilkesboro thing could change the model, because I understand the desire to have 80,000 people in the stands.
Right. Those days are past us, though,
yes,
aren't they?
Those days are past us for most sporting events.
Yeah.
And this is not a NASCAR thing.
Across the board in all sporting events.
Yeah. So you look at North Wilkesboro, yeah, you might want to have 40,000, but the TV money makes it so that is the traffic, nightmare, infrastructure, how do we do that? And this will still work on 20,000 because the TV revenue makes up the difference. So I think that I think North Wilkesboro does so much, but I think it also opens up, is this a new model where we might see some NASCAR racing or maybe some Xfinity series or truck series racing with television money redistributed a little bit, see that in some places where from a dollar in, dollar out, it's not a moneymaker from the track, but the TV money puts it over the top. And I think that's possible.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, we need to take a break. You're watching Mostly Motorsports. We're thankful that Steve Post has joined us here in the studio today. We'll be back with more. It's all brought to you by Lucas Oil Products. It works. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Mostly Motorsports with Scott Traylor.
There is less than 1/100th of an inch of motor oil protecting your car's engine. Friction and heat causes engine oil to experience thermal breakdown, weakening its ability to protect the engine and its parts. Lucas Heavy Duty Oil Stabilizer is specially formulated to resist thermal breakdown, protect vital engine parts, and extend the life of your engine. It also stops smoking, knocking, and oil consumption in worn engines. Lucas Heavy Duty Oil Stabilizer. Keep that engine alive.
Go harder, faster, stronger with Rod and Supply. Whether you are running industrial, farming equipment, or a race car, Rod and Supply has the assortment of rod ends, radius rods, and specialty products that will help you lead the field in performance. Our superior design means our rod ends last longer and perform better, giving you the edge on the track and saving you money. Contact Rod and Supply or order online today at rodandsupply.com. We don't just sell them, we race them. Rodandsupply.com, serving the racing community for over 30 years.
Next to your vehicle's engine, your transmission is the most important component of your car. If it's not properly maintained, your car may not shift properly. By adding Lucas Transmission Fix to your transmission, it cleans and lubricates sticking valves for proper shifting, renews worn bands to stop slipping, stops seal leaks, will not void new car warranties, contains no harmful solvents. Lucas Transmission Fix. It works.
Spirit Specialty Sportswear in-house. We do all of the screen printing, all the embroidery. We do some vinyl. The other add specialty items like your pens, magnets, notepads, calendars. You can actually buy that, build your business, to make it larger. We have the largest screen printing process and the largest embroidery anywhere around in the area. We can do stuff all the way from your school clubs to sports teams, a professional look in the office. If you can imagine it, we can do it for you.
Missouri's must-play getaway, Osage National Golf Resort.
3 9-hole whole courses to choose from at the Lake of the Ozarks in the Osage River Valley. Stay and play packages in our first-class condos. A beautiful clubhouse complete with pro shop and exercise facilities. A large pool for relaxation and families. The Eagle View Sports Bar and Grill. Great wedding facilities. Go online and make your tee time today.
One of the main reasons for poor vehicle performance is a dirty fuel system. It can cause decreased fuel economy and actually do harm to your engine over time. By adding Lucas Fuel Treatment to your vehicle, it cleans and lubricates the entire fuel system. Pump, carburetors, fuel injectors, and valves as you drive. It also improves your vehicle's performance. It's a non-solvent product designed to protect both gasoline and diesel engines. Lucas Fuel Treatment. It works.
Race fans, the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum is open 7 days a week, year-round, for you to come in and check out all of the wonderful race cars on display in the museum. And our online store at SprintCarStuff.com is open 24 hours a day for you to check out everything that we have in stock for Sprint Car fans. Whether it's for a birthday, anniversary, or Christmas, SprintCarStuff.com has it all. That's at the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum in Knoxville.
At Lucas Oil, we take pride in creating problem-solving products to make your car care easier. We protect your vehicle and make it run longer so you can focus on the things that matter most. Whether it's commuting to work, visiting a loved one, taking the kids where they need to go, going to the big game, or anywhere life takes you, Lucas Oil is committed to getting you there for all of life's important moments. Lucas Oil, it works.
You're listening to Mostly Motorsports with Scott Traylor.
Welcome back to Mostly Motorsports. I'm Scott Traylor, along with producer Austin O'Neill. Steve Post, the postman's joining us. Chase Briscoe is going to join us here in just a second.
Nice.
Hey, did you get up to the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum and check out the track tribute to Ascot Park?
Dude, I first off, I just love the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum. So I love. Right. Well, I walk in there when I walk up one sprint car place. When I walk up into the parking lot, I'm like, okay, I'm going to see something special. But that Ascot tribute, and I've shared with people my history of motor sprint car racing goes back now 11 years.
Yeah.
So I'm not an old school guy, but I'm smart enough to realize that there was some really, really neat stuff old school, and Ascot was one of them, and looking at that tribute was unreal.
Man, it's a great exhibit. We'll talk about that and more here in a moment, but joining us right now on the show on Mostly Motorsports is Chase Briscoe. Chase, how you doing?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Well, we're doing pretty good. I got Steve Post, the postman, hanging out with us in studio with us today, and just not the weekend you were hoping for last weekend, huh?
Yeah, definitely was a struggle. I mean, fortunately for us, a lot of other people had struggles too. But, yeah, we kind of struggled, honestly, from practice on. I felt like that was probably our worst practice session we'd had all year long. And just didn't unload well and was kind of chasing a lot of things, trying to get better, and kind of knew going into the race we just needed to survive the day or survive the night. And was trying to do that. And, you know, it was only a couple laps away from the stage, and something happened to Chase Elliott's car and kind of landed in my lap and had a lot of damage to our car. So kind of just rode around there the rest of the night trying to make the best out of what we were dealt. And like I said, it was fortunate that a lot of other people had issues and kind of saved us. But, yeah, I mean, 10 points out isn't the end of the world. I mean, when I got out of the car, I figured I was going to be 35 points back. So I was pretty happy to see I was only 10 points back. And, I mean, that's one stage. So, yeah, still confident in it, but yeah, I wish our night would have went a little bit better, and wasn't 10 points back, but that's the position we're in, and try to just deal with it from here.
How easy is it for you as a driver, as a person, to shake off a bad weekend like that and just look ahead? Because, you know, it's kind of like a wide receiver or a cornerback in the NFL. They get burned on a play. They've got to shake that off. They got to go on to the next play. How are you at handling those kind of situations?
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, we've had a lot of experience that this year, just having bad runs and whatnot where you got to. But, yeah, I mean, I feel like I've always, my entire career, done a fairly good job of, I mean, whether it's a good day or a bad day, it's kind of leaving it at the racetrack, just because, I mean, after the fact, there's nothing you can do to change it, so why even worry about it anymore? And now being a father, that's definitely, I feel like, helped my perspective too. I mean, I'm just normally excited to get back home and see him and hang out with him, and once I'm, you know, playing with him in the floor, I kind of forgot about where we even raced that day, truthfully. So,
yeah,
I mean, you got to take it all in stride, and like you said, I mean, the best wide receiver, the best quarterback, I mean, they all get burned eventually on a play. You just can't be so worried about what happened in the past that you keep screwing up the future. So Yeah, for me, I just kind of try to leave it at the racetrack. And like I said, there's nothing I can do at that point now to go back and change it anyway. So just go on and try to do better next week.
The greatest gift in life is being a parent. Would you agree with me on that?
Yeah, it just makes time go way too fast. I know that.
Yeah.
No doubt.
Yeah.
No doubt, Chase. I think, and I want to expound upon that a little bit. And I'll just share with you that I'm actually out here. Scott's been showing me around. We've done barbecue. We did some great music. We did a good
morning cafe.
We've been just hanging out. But that separation, Scott, you, Chase, myself, we have such a passion for this sport. The separation of it, to go hang out with your son or to go out. We went out and hung out and watched live music last night. Man, that separation, when you roll back into Kansas, when I roll into Kansas tomorrow for that Truck Series race, that separation is rejuvenative.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think, at least for me, and I think like you guys too, your whole life it's, 110% racing. That's all you care about. That's all you worry about. And for me, I feel like it's given me a nice balance of realizing that, well, racing isn't everything. I mean, yeah, you gotta put a lot of effort into it to make it work. But at the end of the day, it's not who defines me. It's not all that matters in life. So for me, it's definitely helped put in a different perspective where, yeah, racing is important to me, but it's not the most important. And, a result at the end of the day isn't it going to define who I am as a person or anything like that. So having a son now, it's definitely changed my life for the better, I feel like. So, yeah, definitely, it can go different ways. I mean, everybody's different, but for me, it definitely, I feel like it made me more focused on racing because you have to provide, obviously. And, the better I run helps me provide for him and our family. But at the same time, it puts things into perspective that it's not the end of the world when you do have a bad day at the racetrack.
It is. It brings that dynamic in there, and I agree with you. Time away has made me a better broadcaster, and I see you guys racing as far as that goes. So we're loading up, getting ready to head out here to Kansas for this weekend's race. Kind of your preview of Kansas for us, and what your expectations are for this weekend, Chase.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to it. We really haven't ran a mile and a half racetrack since the Coke 600, and felt like at the Coke 600 we were probably the best car, and I threw it away. So I'm looking forward to, for sure, getting back to my, Kansas. Good to me. So looking forward to getting there. It's a place where you can run on the fence. So excited for that. And, yeah, just got to go there, and hopefully we can unload good. And we had good speed there the first race, and I literally spun out, I think, on, like, the sixth lap and tore the nose up. So we didn't really get to show what we had. So hopefully we can have good speed again and go there. And just we can't have – a bad race. Obviously, we've kind of used our mulligan to Arlington, so we just got to go there and try to run, in the top 10 both stages and just have a solid run. We haven't done that in, I think, 7-8 weeks where we've even finished in the top 20. We just have had a lot of weird things happen, whether it's self-inflicted or, just random mechanical things. So hopefully we can go to Kansas, have a good run, and just still be in the ballpark or still be in the hunt going into Bristol. I think at Bristol, you can see a lot of major point swings. So we just need to make sure that we're still, in arm's reach of, that playoff top 12. And hopefully we can do that leading Kansas.
The big news of the day is the All-Star race is going to go to North Wilkesboro. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'm excited. I've never been there before, never, ran a lap around there. But I know that that goes back to kind of the roots of our sport. And, I think, for me, at least, I'm excited that we're going to just more of a local racetrack for, an all-star race. I think that's something that we could try at a lot of different places. And, I understand some of the reservations about maybe making some of these like little local racetracks points races, but I think the all-star race is a perfect opportunity to go and try it at these places and, just take our sport to, hometown America. And,
right.
Yeah, I think North Wilkesboro is going to be a perfect place to kind of start that. And I'm definitely excited to get there. I've heard a lot about the place, seen a lot of videos of it and whatnot, but never been there. So, yeah, it's always fun for me whenever I can go to a new racetrack. And from the sounds of it, it's slick and wore out. So it sounds like somewhere I'm going to like a lot. So I'm looking forward to it for sure.
Yeah, I thought about you when I knew that old surface there. I'm like, man, this is going to play right into guys like Chase's hands. This is going to be cool.
That's the big debate. Chase, we've been talking about it quite a bit on the show today. Do they put down new pavement? Do they leave the old pavement? What's your preference?
I think leave the old pavement. I was all about making it a dirt track. I was trying to earn a late model there. It's fine with me if at the cost of the dirt race if we get to keep the old pavement. I feel like anytime we do a repave, it just kind of kills the racing for a couple of years, and it just has so much grip. You know, it's hard to pass. It takes some of the driver out of it. And anytime you can go to a slick wore out racetrack where we're slipping and sliding around, I feel like it's better for the drivers. It's better for the fans. It puts on a better show. So for me, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And I feel like that place is proven it can put on really good racing. And yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Hopefully they leave it. Sounds like they're going to leave it. So that's what I'm hoping they do.
Let's hope. That's for sure. Chase, you talk about hometown tracks. You talk about bringing racing to hometown tracks. That's been one of the things you've done this year. With your partner, Mahindra, you've taken your midget car, you've taken a dirt late model, you've taken a sprint car, and you have gone to some great, great grassroots dirt tracks. What has that been like for you? And what was the appeal of Mahindra to jump on board with you to do that?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's been fun to go back to, you know, kind of my roots and going back running sprint car races. Haven't been very good in them, but had a lot of fun, even though we were struggling, and even trying stuff that I haven't done before, like going and running a dirt late model a few races. But for Mahindra, you know, they wanted to show that they were serious about motorsports and show that, you know, it wasn't just going to be on the Cup car. They wanted to show that they care about grassroots level as well. And for them, it's obviously a great market. I mean, every dirt track you go to has a tractor that's grooming it. And for them to get their name out in front of all these racetrack owners and you know, a lot of farmers go to these racetracks in grassroots America, and they could bring in dealers and entertain them and things like that. And I mean, truthfully, the access to the drivers is way better at the dirt track. It's way less stressful. It's less pressure for us. You know, it's a more relaxed environment. So for their dealers to come, you know, to a dirt track on a Friday night versus coming to the Cup race on Sunday, they get a lot more interaction with me and more authentic interactions. So, yeah, it's just perfect kind of storm for us all to come together. And, yeah, I'm glad they did it. You know, going back to last year's Chili Bowl was the first time they did it, and they're going to be back on it at the Chili Bowl again this year because they see a true benefit of the dirt racing. So hopefully people will respect that. And, you know, if they're in the tractor market, go and give them a Mahindra shot because they really do care about racing and see a huge value in it all.
Yeah, you know, we did the broadcast for the Chili Bowl here at Racing Boys for the last 16 years. What's the Chili Bowl mean to you as a driver when you show up with your midget?
Yeah, I think for me, the Chili Bowl was, I mean, one, it's just a great atmosphere. It's a great race. I feel like it's probably one of the hardest races in the world just to make, let alone win. And it's unique. I mean, what other race do you get guys from so many different disciplines, you know, all competing in one place? It's kind of the off season for every other type of motorsport. So all the eyes are on the Chili Bowl. It puts on an incredible racing. And I think for me, it's kind of the Super Bowl of dirt racing. You know, you have the Knoxville Nationals, which I think is kind of unique where, you know, the Knoxville Nationals, you get all the best sprint car guys, but outside of the sprint car world, you don't have anybody else just showing up to try to run the Knoxville Nationals. But right. At the Chili Bowl, you get all these different disciplines that you don't get at any other event really in the world. So I think that just makes it special that you have so many guys trying it, something different. It's obviously a good time. You know, for me, I get to see a lot of my buddies that still dirt race that I don't get to see a whole lot throughout the year. So I just love going there and hanging out with them for the week. And like I said, it just puts on really good racing, and it's the biggest race of the year. I mean, what other race in the world has 380 something cars trying to make it into 24 spots? There's just nothing like it. So as a fan, I've always been a huge fan of the Chili Bowl, and as a driver to compete in it, it's always special.
I know this is a tough question. I'm going to ask you though, is it about the money or is it about the driller? Is it about the driller or is it about the money?
I mean, that's obviously a huge topic right now, right?
Yep. Like,
I mean, could it pay more money? Absolutely. Do you go there? I mean, for the money, no. I mean, you could win the race right now and you're going to lose money. So, I mean, yeah, I think they could for sure pay better. But I think for me, like just speaking for me, I would much rather have the driller than the money. I mean, I go there knowing that it costs a lot to go there. You're there for a whole week. It's going to be expensive no matter what it pays. But yeah, I mean, I do think it needs to have a pay increase just because of the fact if it's one of the biggest races in the world, which I truly feel like it is, it needs to pay more than $10,000. But at the same time, you're going there for the driller, and I don't think the money is what matters in that event. But I do think it would be nice to see it pay more money just because I think it makes it more legit. I mean, not that it's not legit right now, but I mean, there's a lot of races throughout the country that pay $10,000 to win. And I think making it special, you know, and paying more money to win would make it kind of more unique and more prestigious. I mean, not that the money is what makes it prestigious, but,
right.
You know, you look at Eldora, for example, you know, the $1 million race. I mean, I don't think you need the Chili Bowl to pay $1 million, but the more money you pay, the more enticing it is, the more eyes that are on it, because anytime you're racing for a big amount of money, it just adds intensity and pressure. And I think that event could definitely pay more, but at the same time, like I said, I don't think it's all about the money. You go there trying to win the driller.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, Chase, we appreciate you taking the time to join us here on Mostly Motorsports. Thanks so much for taking the time, and we'll see you this weekend out at Kansas Speedway. Good luck to you, my friend.
Yep, looking forward to it. Always fun talking to you guys.
All right, thank you. Appreciate you. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, more Mostly Motorsports right here on RBN, the Racing Boys Broadcasting Network. It's all brought to you by Lucas Oil Products. It works.
You're listening to Mostly Motorsports with Scott Traylor.
There is less than 1/100th of an inch of motor oil protecting your car's engine. Friction and heat causes engine oil to experience thermal breakdown, weakening its ability to protect the engine and its parts. Lucas Heavy Duty Oil Stabilizer is specially formulated to resist thermal breakdown, protect vital engine parts, and extend the life of your engine. It also stops smoking, knocking, and oil consumption in worn engines. Lucas Heavy Duty Oil Stabilizer. Keep that engine alive.
Go harder, faster, stronger with Rod and Supply. Whether you are running industrial, farming equipment, or a race car, Rod and Supply has the assortment of rod ends, radius rods, and specialty products that will help you lead the field in performance. Our superior design means our rod ends last longer and perform better, giving you the edge on the track and saving you money. Contact Rod and Supply or order online today at rodandsupply.com. We don't just sell them, we race them. Rodandsupply.com, serving the racing community for over 30 years.
Next to your vehicle's engine, your transmission is the most important component of your car. If it's not properly maintained, your car may not shift properly. By adding Lucas Transmission Fix to your transmission, it cleans and lubricates sticking valves for proper shifting, renews worn bands to stop slipping, stops seal leaks, will not void new car warranties, contains no harmful solvents. Lucas Transmission Fix. It works.
Sure, especially sportswear in-house. We do all of the screen printing, all the embroidery. We do some vinyl. The other add specialty items like your pens, magnets, notepads, calendars. You can actually buy that, build your business, and make it larger. We have the largest screen printing process and the largest embroidery anywhere around in the area. We can do stuff all the way from your school clubs to sports teams, a professional look in the office. If you can imagine it, we can do it for you.
Missouri's must play getaway, Osage National Golf Resort.
3 9 hole courses to choose from at the Lake of the Ozarks in the Osage River Valley. Stay and play packages in our first class condos. A beautiful clubhouse complete with pro shop and exercise facilities. A large pool for relaxation and families. The Eagle View Sports Bar and Grill. Great wedding facilities. Go online and make your tee time today.
One of the main reasons for poor vehicle performance is a dirty fuel system. It can cause decreased fuel economy and actually do harm to your engine over time. By adding Lucas Fuel Treatment to your vehicle, it cleans and lubricates the entire fuel system. Pump, carburetors, fuel injectors, and valves as you drive. It also improves your vehicle's performance. It's a non-solvent product designed to protect both gasoline and diesel engines. Lucas Fuel Treatment. It works.
Race fans, the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum is open 7 days a week, year-round, for you to come in and check out all of the wonderful race cars on display in the museum. And our online store at SprintCarStuff.com is open 24 hours a day for you to check out everything that we have in stock for Sprint Car fans. Whether it's for a birthday, anniversary, or Christmas, SprintCarStuff.com has it all. That's at the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum in Knoxville.
At Lucas Oil, we take pride in creating problem-solving products to make your car care easier. We protect your vehicle and make it run longer so you can focus on the things that matter most. Whether it's commuting to work, visiting a loved one, taking the kids where they need to go, going to the big game, or anywhere life takes you, Lucas Oil is committed to getting you there for all of life's important moments. Lucas Oil, it works.
You're listening to Mostly Motorsports with Scott Traylor.
Welcome back. It's Mostly Motorsports. It's all brought to you by Lucas Oil Products. Joining us now on the show, he picked up a Powerride 360 win at Baldo Speedway. JT Imperial joins us now on the show. JT, how you doing?
Good. Thank you guys for having me.
Hey, man, that was a pretty stellar performance you had down there at Baldo.
Yeah, no, it was a good track, good facility. We just, you know, lucky enough to start up front and led all 30 laps, and it went green to checker.
Yeah, yeah. Tell us a little bit about your program, and first of all, because, you know, for a lot of us here in the Midwest, we're not real familiar with a lot of the guys that run out there in the West. Tell us a little bit about you and your team and what you guys are all about.
Well, our team, my dad started racing sprint cars in 79. He bought a car from a Tommy Thompson out of New Mexico, and that kind of started it. And then me and my brother has always been around it. And my brother drove for a few years, and when we first started, they didn't think I was going to want to drive because my brother was always the one, you know, on the quads and everything, dirt bikes and everything else, and I was always kind of the one in the back.
Yeah.
And then we got into sprint cars, and they built him a car, and they said, well, here, if you want to try to get in and drive it, try to. And actually, I had to sit on a phone book in his seat and everything to practice.
I've heard that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then once I got in one, it was kind of, couldn't get me out of it.
Right, right.
So it's just our dad passed away in 2020 from cancer. So now it's just my and I.
Yeah.
So we go.
So that's
pretty good.
That had to be tough with your dad passing. I know he was probably always there for you back in those days. Let's talk about what you guys are doing right now as a race team. We've got Steve Post, the postman, sitting in the studio with us today as well. He's going to ask you a question here in a moment. But what is your goals as a team right now? Are you just kind of like an outlaw team? You just kind of run wherever you need to run right now?
Yeah, yeah. We don't really have a series or anything we kind of stick with. I mean, in the past, it's been ASCS Southwest, but that's kind of went away as far as the tracks have went away in Arizona. So,
yeah,
you know, luckily Brad Whitfield has Yuma, and he just acquired Casa Grande as well. So it should come, I think it's going to come back quite well, actually, with those two tracks, with him being in charge. And so for right now, we just kind of run, like you said, wherever we can. I mean, I think we plan on going to Dallas for those Winter Nationals here coming up. And, you know, luckily we have a bunch of people that help us out, and we're fortunate enough to do it.
Man, it's going to be a lot of fun to go down to the Winter Nationals because we're not sure if Devil's Bowl is going to be there next year, right? So it'd be fun to go down there and compete at Devil's Bowl for the Winter Nationals. That'd be
really
a lot
of fun. Really well. See what we got there as far as that goes. What would you say? What would you say is you talk about we had some Arizona tracks go away, but then you're talking about some new ownership at some places, kind of the state of dirt track racing out there in New Mexico, Arizona, the Southwest, the lower Southwest. What's going on? What's the vibe? What's the state of it all out there?
Well, I mean, you have Aztec up in, you know, Farmington, Durango area, which is pretty set. I mean, they've been there, I think this is their 70th year or something. I think they're fixing to have their 70th year bash this weekend, actually. And then Votto, you know, with Royal Jones out there, he built a fabulous facility.
Yeah.
I mean, it's probably one of the best in the country as far as I'm concerned, just the way it's laid out and how nice it is. And then you have Yuma, which Brad's had for a few years, and that compares just to Votto. I mean, it's an excellent facility.
Yeah.
And now with him taking over Casa Grande, I think it'll be, you know, just as nice. So, and then you have Adobe, which is here in town. They run mini sprints and midgets and some small stuff, and it's, I mean, they get 30, 50 cars every time they race mini sprints or midgets.
And so are we seeing graduates from that? That seems to be the model. I'm over in North Carolina where we have Millbridge, and we're seeing graduates out of Millbridge. It's insane what Millbridge is doing,
right,
putting racers in the world. So are you seeing some graduates move up to full-size cars from the mini sprints and the racing there locally?
Yes, yes, actually you are. Actually, we just had it's Tuesday in Logan Calderwood. They were racing mini sprints. They just stepped up to wing and non-wing sprint cars.
Nice.
You have a couple more guys that are going to come up. As far as there's a Preston Norberry that runs there. That his dad raced midgets and sprint cars in the day. So I'm sure they're going to find something. But yeah, you have probably, I don't know, 3 to 5 guys that could come up for the next, you know, 4 to 5 years right behind each other.
Wow.
Huh. That's good to hear.
I know that after you won your race, you were trucking home the next day and you had a little truck problem, didn't you?
Yeah. Broke down about 2.5 hours from home in Benson, Arizona.
Yeah.
it was quite the weekend, let me tell you.
Yeah, well, you know, it's great that Royal Jones has done as much as he's done for motorsports. I mean, Steve and I were talking about this a little bit earlier. We don't see a lot of people wanting to build racetracks right now, right? Mm-hmm. Or reopen racetracks. And we're really blessed to have a guy like Royal Jones, I would say.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he had Las Cruces for years.
Right.
And I don't know the story why he left there or anything like that, but for him to step up and build a facility like he did is great for the sport in general, not just the Southwest, but I mean, the Outlaws were there last year or earlier this year.
Yeah.
The late models go there, I think, for the winter, for like a week straight.
That's right.
And then he has his guys that run there every week. I mean, I know he's got 305 sprint cars. He's got late models, IMCAs, and I'm sure there's some other ones in there that I don't even know about.
Yeah.
What's your calendar like out there? I mean, do you guys race much at all during the summertime? Or I just saw on your social media one of the tracks is starting up September into January. What's the calendar like with the weather out there?
It's so hot out
there
right now.
I can't imagine what it's like. Did you race much this summer, or do you or not?
No, not really. I mean, the mini sprints, they race a little longer because it's right here.
Oh.
They shut down, you know, June, July, August.
Yeah.
You know, it's just too, I mean, back in the day we raced Manzanita. I mean, I remember growing up and we raced there, you know, July 4th and this, you know, and all that, but not anymore. It's just like today, I think it's 111 here.
Oh my gosh.
Lord.
Oh,
God.
We know it's really hot out there in the West right now. Is El Paso still open?
No, I don't believe it is.
I don't think it is.
It shut down a few years ago, just like Las Cruces did.
Yeah, because Royal was promoting that racetrack at one time, and I know when we traveled with the Lucas Oil ASCS, Racing Boys did, when we did their live pay-per-view broadcast, we went from Las Cruces to El Paso.
Yeah. That is neat.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, no, it was. We did that many times, like back with SCOA, the Sprint Cars Owners of Arizona, a few years back, but they used to go there. There used to be one in Gallup. There was one in Alamogordo, and those have all kind of went away.
What is your favorite track of all the tracks you go to?
Ooh, my as of now is probably Aztec New Mexico, just because that was the last win I got with my dad and my brother, and we were all together.
Oh, wow.
So that's probably, you know, for me, that's probably just because of the memories.
Yeah, no doubt.
You mentioned Manzanita. I forget who I was talking to someone this week about Manzanita. What's your?
I think me and you were talking about it last night.
Last night,
yeah.
We were talking about it last. Oh, that's right. It was you and I. Yeah, it's like last night, all the way back to last night. Yeah.
Right.
What's your? What is? Is there a favorite memory or something about Manzanita that just sticks out in your mind?
There's a few. I grew up there. I mean, I remember. You know, my parents used to drop me and my brother and another friend of ours, Patrick Shaw, off in the front of the grandstand. All right, after the races, come down to the pits. Here's $10. We used to go get a cheese crisp and buy one of the little sprint cars.
Uh-huh.
You know, so for me, that's probably that. Wow. And then probably 04, I think, or 04, 05, I was running the Western, started 14th and came up to second and ended up flipping and crashing. But,
oh boy.
You know, we ran good there. We won some races there. And my uncle, him and Jeremy Sherman, won a lot of races there.
Yeah. JT, what is your biggest win to date for you? What race do you get the most satisfaction out of winning over the course of your career? What would it be?
I'd probably have to say my first one. It was a non-wing race in Tucson.
Ah.
It was a non-wing 360 race, and that was probably because I passed him coming out of four for the last lap, and it was only my second or third year in sprint cars. And the guy that finished second thought he won because he thought I was a lapper.
Oh, no kidding.
That's awesome. What would be the bucket list dream win for you?
Knoxville.
Exactly. Yeah. Even
on a local deal. It doesn't have to be a national. It's just even on a local show there, so hard.
Yeah.
You know, it's just so competitive. Everybody's got nice stuff, and everybody, you know, that's just a different racetrack. You could be good anywhere else in the country and go there and struggle.
Yeah, right, just across those scales and tell them to take your right-hand turn into victory lane would be freaking
awesome.
You know,
our producer, Austin O'Neill, he's a sprint car driver as well, and I think everybody would like to be able to go to Knoxville and race for a year, wouldn't they?
Oh, that would be awesome. We've talked about, a few years ago, we went back there probably 7 times, just flew back every other week or every third week, whenever we can, me and my brother can. Actually, it was the year my dad died. It was 2020. It was during COVID. That'd be awesome. Just 1 year there. Just to see where you're at the end of the year. Because, you're going to struggle. I mean, everybody does.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt.
You know, get the right help and guidance and try to make your program a little bit better. That's like the next level compared to, unless you're going to go out on a national deal or try to get an all-star or get 4-10s or something.
Such a unique skill set there. It's just so unique how to maintain speed around that place.
Let me ask you something. Is the car count pretty steady out there with 360s right now?
As far as the wing deal, you get I think this year the 20 cars was our minimum that we showed up with. The non-wing deal, they have so many divisions out here with different motor rules. It's I think between Arizona and New Mexico, there's five or six different associations in just sprint cars.
Wow. Ugh.
And so if we could, if everybody would just go back to, 360s, there's no 410 deal around here except for CRA USAC, in California.
Mm-hmm.
But if we could get the car count, everybody back to a 360, I wouldn't be surprised if you got 40 cars a night, just like it was at Manzanita.
Don't you think that some of the problem lies where the cylinder head, some of the 360 series are running open cylinder heads instead of running an ASCS cylinder head? I think it would be better off if everybody stayed on the ASCS cylinder head, wouldn't you?
I do. I for the Southwest region, I do. There's just, we're local guys, we don't, there's budgets, if we can get 20 races a year, that's good for a local deal, as far as the Southwest region. I'm agreeing with you. If everybody would just get on the same program, have the same set of heads, even if they for a year or two brought back where you could run the ASCS gasket, if you didn't have the Brodex head, you still had to have 11X.
Right.
You can still, bring some, there's still guys out there that would do that because they can buy those heads at different places. And but yeah, if we could just get it back to the 360 deal all the way around, I think we'd have a lot better car count.
Yeah. Well, congratulations on your win down at Votto, man. We really, that's exciting. What do you think about PowerEye? What do you think about what they're trying to do with 360s?
There's some things that they're really, really great at, and there's some things that I would change, but, as long as they give us an opportunity to race, I think it's a good deal.
Yeah, no doubt. JT, thanks for taking the time to join us here on Mostly Motorsports, man. We appreciate it. Tell your mom we said hi, and sorry about the loss of your father. I know that had to be a tough one to swallow there, and good luck to you the rest of the year, bud.
All right, thank you guys for having me, and thanks again.
All right.
Thanks, JT.
All right, there you have it. JT Imperial joining us on the show.
Man, good guy. Man, I love it. See, this is why, Scott, you and I, we chatted about this last night, okay? This is why, what you're doing here is so cool. Because we just talked to JT Imperial and Chase Briscoe.
Yeah.
I mean, who else? Nobody else is doing this. I mean, and you and I talked about how different shows have different niches. Wing Nation, we're wing sprint car racing.
Right,
And different shows. And it was great the first half hour you and I, John, and carried on. The last half hour was spectacular because we talked to two guys in two totally different places, two different disciplines of the sport, and yet everyone loves racing, and we have a chance to kick it around. It was, man, that was so cool.
You know, the show's not a lot about notes. There's not a lot of structure in this show.
Well, we went and had breakfast, and no, we didn't even talk at breakfast about what we were going to talk about. So, no, you're right.
Well, you know, I do that all the time with Austin. When Austin shows up, Austin, this happens all the time, doesn't it? When he comes in here, we don't talk about what we're going to talk about.
Yeah, it just goes, yeah.
Because you want to keep it fresh.
Yeah.
Right?
Well.
Austin, anything that you'd want to do in the world, it'd race weekly up at Knoxville, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I've said that a handful of times. It's a sprint car driver's dream.
Yeah.
Even to get to race there once, you know, which I've only been there once. And, you know, I'm just happy that I had the opportunity to go there once, you know. So, you know, it would be like a lifetime goal, I guess, at this point to go there and race, you know, for a year. But, yeah, it doesn't matter if you're, you know, mainly wing racing. But I think if you have a sprint car, you know, you want to be at Knoxville at some point in your career.
Yeah, no doubt.
It's amazing. It just is. What a magical spot, you know. And who is it we were talking about? Forget, we had someone on Wing Nation. Ayrton Jennington.
Yeah.
And to go across those scales.
Yeah, for his first win.
And take a right-hand turn.
Yeah.
Man, I'll tell you what.
Did you see the video of him and his dad?
Yeah, I saw a video of his
dad. That was awesome. Give me chills when I saw that.
Yeah, it did. I mean, Scott, that's the special part about racing. And you talk about it. And, you know, and even you mentioned him and his dad. JT lost his dad.
Yeah.
Watching Chase Briscoe and Kevin, his dad. I mean, you want to talk about proud father around that NASCAR garage. I'm telling you what, Kevin Briscoe is. Kevin Briscoe is proud dad. And I think that's the beauty of our sport. It's something that we all do together. We all love. Some it's a father-son deal, but it's just all part of it. And that transcends all boundaries. It transcends borders. Yeah. And so it's so neat.
Yeah. I want to talk a little bit more about that track tribute that's going on up at the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame
Museum. Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
They got all the videos, driver uniforms, memorabilia. They've got a lot of race cars up there. What was your favorite car out of all? My personal favorite car up there was the Jimmy Oski old paint car, the car that was in its original racing condition.
Yeah, I think that was mine, too.
I think I like it when they have that patina on them.
Yeah. Don't you? I think so, too, because that was just it was so unique. And as someone, and it's funny, and you know, your background and my background are different in that none of that. I was a big block dirt modified guy in the Northeast.
Right.
So those cars, I never saw them. I never paid attention to them. I was so enthralled with the big block modifieds. And so when you see something unique like that, it's like, I wonder what the story was here. And then you start talking and you start reading because the display is so well done with the videos and everything. You start learning about it. And similarly, the one I think about all the time is when I saw the Hooker Hood car with the dual tires on it.
Oh, yeah.
And then, of all people, ran into Ricky, and Ricky told me the whole story of it, you know.
Yeah.
But I just think when looking at that Ascot tribute, that car, when you see unique things like that, it's like, and then the display is so good that it not only shows you a unique thing, but then it easily describes the process, where we were at in time, why they did it, who did it.
Right.
The Sprint Car Hall of Fame, that display, the Sprint Car Hall of Fame has crushed it with displays. Being a guy that got to spend a lot of time with Greg Hodnett prior to his death. Last year was the Greg Hodnett display.
Right.
And I'm telling you, I mean, I went in there and did everything from laugh to cried.
Right.
You know, I mean, the Sprint Car Hall of Fame, when they do a display, they do a display. They do it right. And they have crossed every T and dotted every I with this Ascot display.
That is all because of the leadership of Bob Baker.
No doubt. Bob Baker is just, again, passion. This is passion for it. His passion for detail. His passion for every part of it. No doubt.
Yeah. Did you buy a raffle ticket for the Triple X Sprint Car?
No, I haven't done that yet. It's a joke Aaron and I have. Aaron and I have a joke that we're going to just go in and we're going to buy a bunch of tickets and she's going to field a car for me to run sprint cars. And I'm like, okay. Oh, yeah, because this week on Wing Nation, we had Devin Borden, who picked up the win.
He used to run with the ASCS National Tour,
exactly.
And then when he went to Pennsylvania
of all places,
some guy walked over and says, I want you to drive my car, and he never came back to the
Mike
Midwest.
Mike Kefner was that guy.
Yeah.
That was the 27. That was Hodnett's former car owner.
Yeah.
And then he just recently parted with Mike and got with Jim Shuttlesworth, a brand new team, 23 car, and whooped him on Saturday night at Port.
Yeah.
So I'm all brash and, look, I said, and we're talking about the Tuscarora 50, which is this weekend up at Port Royal.
Right.
And I said, here's what you do. Like, I know anything about what you do. You know, and Aaron's sitting over there rolling her eyes, you know. Here's what you do. And Devin's nickname is the Daredevil, because he ain't scared to put it
he
up on the fence.
He is not scared.
He ain't scared to put it on the fence. Said, there's a blue number 69. Guy's name is Lance DeWeese.
Right.
You follow him for the first 40 or 45 laps. That way you won't burn your tires off. And then you out-daredevil him in the last five laps, because I think you can out-daredevil Lance DeWeese. He's a veteran. He's not going to get up there and out-daredevil you. And we're sitting there, and Aaron's like, why are you giving advice to a driver? I said, Devin, I've had a grand total of zero starts driving a race car,
right,
but I'm going to buy a raffle ticket for the Sprint Car Hall of Fame, and Aaron's going to field a car for me. So, and he laughed. We all laughed about it. But that, yeah, we always joke around. I've got to get we'll get some tickets for that sprint car, but I won't be driving it. There's no way in the world. But it's so neat that they do this. What? How many years is it? This is their 13th, 14th year.
Yeah,
I think it is
like
of their
that.
Their
yeah.
car. And yeah. I love how they mix it up. I'll never forget. I was at PRI. And Mark Smith with what's Mark's chassis deal up in Mach 1 chassis in Pennsylvania. Mark is there, walks up to the booth, and I've known Mark for years. And Mark and I and Bob Baker knew who he was. And Bob said, "Hey, I've got something I want to propose to you." He said, "Next year, would you be interested
in building a Mach 1?
Building a Mach 1 for our car?" And you'd have swore someone gut punched Mark Smith. He's like, really? Like, one of mine? Yeah. And so, like, that was probably three cars ago was a Mach 1 chassis.
Oh, yeah.
Mark's with chassis.
It's triple X now.
It's triple X this year. Triple X with a Moyle engine this year, yeah. But Mark was like, and I talked to him later on, and he said, dude, you didn't even know what that means to be part of the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and to be part of that raffle car. And
a lot of exposure there.
And that's what he said. He said, my car is going to be from Skagit to Vado to East Bay,
everywhere
to Port Royal,
all the major events yeah,
exactly. And he said, and so that's, it's neat. So I love what the Sprint Car Hall of Fame does and how they partner with the various builders on these cars and engine builders as well.
Well, and if you can't get up to the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum, you can always do it online at sprintcarraffle.com. That's sprintcarraffle.com. Steve, thanks so much for being in here today.
Dude,
man.
I'm telling you what, I'm just going to, we flew into town yesterday, and this man right here sharing this with me showed me the best Kansas City barbecue. We did barbecue last night.
What'd you think of Smokehouse?
Man, Smokehouse was good.
Were those burn-ins good?
Oh, son, are you kidding me?
How about the beans?
The beans were so good, too. So we leave there, and we go to Knuckleheads, and we just hear this great band from Austin, Texas. The guy warming up was great.
Yeah.
The crowd was great. Met some fun for folks there. Just had a great time. Came back and sat here in the studio and just kicked around all of the struggles and trials of life. And, you know, just as two guys will do at the end of a night of a couple of cocktails, we solved all the world problems last night.
We did.
I don't know that we got a darn thing done, but we solved all the world's problems.
We had a good time, though, last night. And you got to eat at the Corner Cafe this morning.
This was the best ever. We're eating at the Corner Cafe, and we ordered the same thing with one exception. We ordered the Meat Lover's Omelette. My man here goes with jalapenos in it. I look over at one time, and there's literally sweat pouring off of him.
Kirk always laughs at me when I sweat.
They loaded you up with jalapenos, and we've had a great time. So you and Deidre have just been wonderful hosts. We have talked about this forever, coming into town a day early for Kansas. And dude, we finally did it, and this won't be the last time, because it's great. And then to get to hang out here in studio, I love chatting on the phone, but it's so much better here in studio.
Let's do it. Try to do it again.
Yes, we will. We'll work on that. You got it, my man.
Thank you, Steve. We appreciate you being here today on Mostly Motorsports. It's all been brought to you by Lucas Oil Products. It works. We'll see you tomorrow right here on Mostly Motorsports. We hope that you'll join us tomorrow. See you then.
One of the main reasons for poor vehicle performance is a dirty fuel system. It can cause decreased fuel economy and actually do harm to your engine over time. By adding Lucas Fuel Treatment to your vehicle, it cleans and lubricates the entire fuel system. Pump, carburetors, fuel injectors, and valves as you drive. It also improves your vehicle's performance. It's a non-solvent product designed to protect both gasoline and diesel engines. Lucas Fuel Treatment. It works.
Go harder, faster, stronger with Rod and Supply. Whether you are running industrial, farming equipment, or a race car, Rod and Supply has the assortment of rod ends, radius rods, and specialty products that will help you lead the field in performance. Our superior design means our rod ends last longer and perform better, giving you the edge on the track and saving you money. Contact Rod and Supply or order online today at rodandsupply.com. We don't just sell them, we race them. Rodandsupply.com, serving the racing community for over 30 years.
Race fans, the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum is open 7 days a week, year-round, for you to come in and check out all of the wonderful race cars on display in the museum. And our online store at SprintCarStuff.com is open 24 hours a day for you to check out everything that we have in stock for Sprint Car fans. Whether it's for a birthday, anniversary, or Christmas, SprintCarStuff.com has it all. That's at the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum in Knoxville.
At Lucas Oil, we take pride in creating problem-solving products to make your car care easier. We protect your vehicle and make it run longer so you can focus on the things that matter most. Whether it's commuting to work, visiting a loved one, taking the kids where they need to go, going to the big game, or anywhere life takes you, Lucas Oil is committed to getting you there for all of life's important moments. Lucas Oil, it works.